Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, January 3rd, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is over at the transfer station today. He's having a good time. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let me know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You can also check out my Facebook page and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All right, so more stuff on what's going on with me because it never ends. I was, as I talked about on my last show, I was unable to travel to Florida because I had a flare of symptoms, whether it's post-vaccine or chronic Lyme. We're sorting that out. I mean, I'm assuming that I have inflammation as a result of having had the COVID vaccine because I had inflammatory symptoms starting 2 weeks after I got my third shot, my booster, in late 2021. And one of the symptoms that I have when I am flared is tremors. And that's the main symptom that I have. It makes it so I can't function. It's very unpleasant. The type of tremors that I have, I believe, are labeled as titubations, which means I will shake my head yes, or no, or I'll have torso tremors. And when it happens, it's very alarming. It's very uncomfortable. And I don't feel well while it's going on. I have lightheadedness or heavyheadedness and exhaustion and all kinds of stuff. Right now, I am feeling pretty good, and we're going to talk about that. So that's very exciting. So one of the things we talked about last week was that one of the things that you do if somebody has post-vaccine symptoms, you check for Lyme. Check for Lyme, check for co-infections. And especially if you're in New England, and especially if the person knows that they have had tick-borne illness in the past, if they know that they've had tick-borne illness in the past, been treated for it, it's quite possible that they're having a reemergence or a flare. So I had a very interesting week. Because I had these symptoms, I went and got some care, and I'm very, very grateful to my caregivers. So one of my caregivers, my primary care physician, and that's Dr. LaGuardia, and he prescribed pharmaceuticals for me, which I went and got. I haven't started taking them yet because things are going pretty good. And he prescribed for me amoxicillin. I have been hesitant to take doxycycline because I'm concerned about the GI side effects. And so when I take antibiotics for tick-borne illness, I tend to take amoxicillin. If I have tick-borne illness, what I've got going on is it's long-standing and it's a reemergence. Do we know for sure that I have microorganisms in my system? At the moment, no, we don't know for sure. Do we know that I have a post-Lyme disease inflammatory pattern? That may be what's going on. It's not entirely clear, but we'll talk about how we're going to get to that point. And then what about the post-vaccine syndromes symptoms? Well, remember that the inflammatory pathways that are elicited by both COVID-19 infection and the mRNA vaccines, that is by the spike protein, the inflammatory pathways that are brought about are the same. They're basically the same pathway. There's certain pathways that get elevated. Your TH1 and TH2 white blood cells become imbalanced. The different parts of your cellular immunity get affected. And so they don't work as well, and they don't function as well. And of course, both the spike protein and tick-borne illness can affect the vagus nerve. So you get autonomic nervous system symptoms. And certainly anything that's neurotoxic, which both the spike protein and spirochetes are, and basically all of the tick-borne illnesses are, they all cause neurotoxicity. So if they're affecting any part of your brain and if they're affecting any of your peripheral nerves, one of the things you can get is tremors, and you can get other symptoms too. You can get emotional symptoms. And you can also get, you know, you can get shaking, you can get a feeling of tremulousness inside your body, and you can also get brain fog. When I am very flared, one of the things that happens to me is I have word-finding problems. I'm very fortunate that my cognitive abilities don't seem to have declined, but I'll have acute episodes where I can't think of the word. Right, yeah. Can't get the word. What's that concept? What do I have? Borrelia burgdorferi, that's it. Well, I actually don't know for sure. So I definitely get symptoms that could be tick-borne illness. And do you think I've had tick-borne illness? Well, I know I did. I definitely had tick-borne illness. I definitely had Lyme disease in 2010 because I was definitely bitten by a tick. I pulled the tick off me. It was in my groin. And I pulled it off and I watched a little circle, a little red circle, get small and bigger until it was a good, 6 inches across. It's really big. And I was thinking, oh, it's just cellulitis. I'm just going to put antimicrobial. I didn't want it to be Lyme disease. Finally went to the doctor and the doctor, it was a very lovely, I remember her name. Her name was Karen Cusano and she was a nurse practitioner working with Dr. Venti, who was my PCP at the time. And she looked at the rash and said, oh, nice erythema migrans rash. Here, take these antibiotics. Do I need to do blood testing? No. No, you have Lyme disease. Take these antibiotics. Took the amoxicillin. And within a few days, the rash completely receded. And I also took a lot of herbs. I took cat's claw and andrographis and sarsaparilla. And I took Nutramedics herbs. I took berberine, pinella, and a whole bunch of stuff. And I did that. So I took the antibiotics for probably 6 weeks. And along with probiotics, I took Saccharomyces boulardii, which is a good probiotic to take when you're taking an antibiotic because it cannot be killed by antibiotics unless the antibiotic has antifungal activity. So if you're taking metronidazole or fluconazole or ketoconazole, your Sac boulardii could be killed by that. But I was not taking that, so I took Sac boulardii and that completely helped. And I treated myself for Lyme disease after that, like you're supposed to, for months. I probably treated myself, like I got bitten in August and I had the erythema migrans maybe later in August and I started taking the antibiotics. I remember I was still taking the antibiotics in September when I went to visit my parents in Florida and then I finished my antibiotics then. And then I continued to take herbal medicine and, you know, naturopathic medicine probably through December, because I remember we were back in spin class and I still remember feeling woozy and weird and having neurological symptoms that I was treating with natural medicine. So I definitely had Lyme disease then, and it took a while to clear. And then I thought it was cleared and I felt pretty good. And then I didn't think too much about it. Of course, I struggle with fatigue because I'm, you know, athletic and very busy with my naturopathic practice. And I also went through menopause and I thought, oh, I have this fatigue and, you know, it's probably just life. But after I took the third vaccine for COVID-19, that's when I started to get, 2 weeks later, which is when your antibodies against that vaccine peak, that is when I started to get the neurological symptoms, where I got lightheadedness, it was hard standing up, I had orthostatic intolerance, sort of like a POTS thing going on, where I would stand up and I would not feel well. I was very fortunate that I didn't get, I only had nausea and really bad gastrointestinal symptoms when I fainted after getting the vaccine, the day after getting it. But beyond that, I didn't have a lot of nausea. That's not true. Once in a while I'd get nausea, but I never got sick again. But I would have lightheadedness, I would have shakiness, I would have actual tremors. And I treated it, I wasn't thinking that I had latent tick-borne illness at that time. So this was already early 2022, late 21 and early 22 when I started treating myself, and I treated myself as though I had inflammation from spike proteins. So that meant I was taking black cumin seed, I was taking lots of curcumin, I was taking fish oil, I was taking, back then I wasn't taking different things than I'm taking now. I had an elevated D-dimer, and D-dimer will elevate when you have a lot of inflammation. It will also elevate when you're about to have a pulmonary, or when you're having a pulmonary embolism, which is you have a blood clot that has gone to your lungs and can stop you from breathing and can be life-threatening. So I had the D-dimer elevated, and that can be also be elevated if you have a DVT, a deep venous thrombosis. That means you have a blood clot in your leg. I didn't have either of those. An elevated D-dimer from both COVID-19 and the vaccine are common. We see that a lot, and my doc was monitoring me for it. And so we think that the microclots that are caused by the spike protein elevates the D-dimer. So I took things to help that, and the fish oil is something that could help that. I took annatto tocotrienols, which is a form, an active, healthful form of vitamin E. So I took that and I started taking natokinase, which is a, natokinase is very helpful. Natokinase is a fermented, it's a fermented soy product. And I started taking that, and that can help to break up blood clots and break up fibrin. And it also can help with blood pressure. And it also happens to help with biofilms from Lyme disease. So biofilms are this protein that the spirochetes produce to surround themselves so you can't, so that the immune system can't see them. And so that's another reason why Lyme can persist, because if you throw antibiotics at it, the spirochetes are very clever and they do a couple of things. One of the things is they make a protein coating around themselves, so they're like a cyst, and the only way you can get through them is with antifungals. Antibiotics will not break up these cyst forms, these round forms, these also known as persister, their type of persister form. A persister cell is a Lyme cell that that just stays around and has stuff protecting it so that it can't be killed. And antibiotics have a difficult time going after persister cells. So I was I had these. I probably had these persister cells, and so I wasn't thinking about it, and I took the natokinase, and I also wound up, and it was very hard to get that D-dimer to budge, and it went really high. It went up over 2, which is a high level of D-dimer. It's very concerning, and I had one practitioner concerned that I was going to have a stroke. Well, as far as I know, I never had a stroke, thank God. And I continued to take the natokinase. Eventually, I read somewhere that that people who were treating people post COVID-19 and also with long hauler syndrome and also with vaccine injury were finding that they were treating them for microclots. And one of the things they did is they gave them trypsin. So trypsin is an enzyme that can break up clots as well. So I said, wonder if I can find a product that has trypsin in it that I can easily take. And I was very fortunate to find that there were just digestive enzymes that you can find that contain trypsin. So I found one, and I've been taking that, and I've been taking that right along. And eventually my D-dimer did go down. Did the D-dimer go down because of time, because I reduced my inflammation, because of all the stuff I'm taking? Hard to say, but the Lyme, if I still have tick-borne illness, it didn't maintain the D-dimer, and all the things I did to reduce the inflammation that caused the microclots improved. It's also possible that my spike proteins, like we're not, I don't know if I'm still dealing with post-COVID stuff as much as tick-borne stuff. I suspect that it could be both. I suspect there's definitely a tick-borne thing going on, because I'm treating for that. And I'm getting better. So I decided in the summer I had a flare. I had an injury, and then I had a flare, and I had the shaking again. It started up again. I didn't have it for a very, very long time, and then for months and months and months. And then finally in August, they started up again, and I didn't know if I had a new bite or if it was because I was inflamed because I had these injuries. And Lyme reemerged. It's hard to say. And I treated for Lyme, and I took antibiotics at that time, as well as a small number of helpful herbs. So I took Chinese skullcap, and I took Japanese knotweed, and I took berberine and pinella, and oregano oil. And eventually I got better, but I don't think I got 100% better, because I was struggling with mostly fatigue, but the tremors had gone away. And it's quite possible that the Chinese skullcap and the Japanese knotweed helped me. And so that's why the tremors went away, because Japanese knotweed is neuroprotective. That's one of the ways that it works. So I was okay for a good 2 months, and then I got into some caffeine and sugar, as you heard me talk about last week, and stress. And then right before I was set to leave to go visit my mother in Florida, I woke up with horrible tremors and shakes and a bad belly. And the bad belly got my mom to say, "Don't come. I don't want you to get me sick." So I'd stay home and start working on this. And that's when I got a hold of my PCP, who offered me amoxicillin and also propranolol. And propranolol is a beta blocker. And beta blockers, that was something that was suggested by the neurologist. He said, "You have essential tremors, And it's a kind of essential tremor. It's not concerning. We don't think you have ALS or multiple. You don't have amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. You don't have Parkinson's disease. You don't have multiple sclerosis, which are, you know, severe chronic neurological disorders. They didn't think I had any of that. So he said, if they flare up again, we'll give you propranolol. So Dr. LaGuardia prescribed me propranolol. Have I taken it yet? No, not yet. I don't know if I will take it. We'll see. But I have it on hand, and I also have the amoxicillin on hand in case I decide I need them. So the next thing I did was I was very fortunate to talk to my friend and colleague, Mariah Hinchy. She's a naturopathic physician that practices in Hebron, Connecticut at Dow Vitality, right on Main Street in Hebron. Really lovely place and a great place to go for a very, very specific focus on tick-borne illness. Anyway, so I was able to talk to her, and she talked to me about what was going on, and she talked to me about how the problem with taking antibiotics, especially amoxicillin, is that it doesn't go after persister cells, and it can help you to create more persister cells. And, you know, if you have persister cells, they're going to keep doing the thing to your immune system, and your immune system is always trying to fight with these spirochetes because they don't want them there, and you know, they can persist, they can open up, they can close, they can do whatever they want, and you know, the more down your immune system is, the more they are to reemerge and give you problems. So she said, beware of taking. You can take them if you want to, Fran, but you might make yourself more persister cells. And you might make the persister cells, and you might, and you won't be killing your persister cells. So that's very interesting. And the other thing, of course, is whenever I take an antibiotic, I shouldn't say most people, because it doesn't happen to everybody, which surprises me. But whenever I take antibiotics, it messes up my digestive system. I get at least a little bit queasy, depending on the antibiotic. And then, of course, it messes with my lower GI as well. I mean, and I take Saccharomyces boulardii, which is the probiotic yeast that can't be killed by antibacterial antibiotics. And it helps, and especially if I take a couple, you know, like 10,000 billion or 10 billion organisms a day. It definitely helps, but it's not 100%. It's better not to take it. It's better not to take it and eat fruits and vegetables and eat healthy fiber and maybe take a regular probiotic with a broad spectrum of good bacteria and to eat fermented foods. That's much better for your gut than taking antibiotic and taking Saccharomyces boulardii. Now, if you have other things going on, you can take Sac boulardii and it will help with a lot of other things. Sac boulardii is phagocytic. It will go after unfriendly bacteria that are living in your digestive system, and it will outcompete other yeast, like yeast like candida, that if it overgrows, it can cause inflammation and irritation. So Sac boulardii is very helpful. But in my case, you see, it's my opinion that if you're going to do antibiotics can be really good if you have a flare, a very active organism. And so if you see an erythema migraines rash, you could take antibiotics and that'll probably really help you. And people like that, I'll see people get the erythema migraines rash. It's very clear that they have an acute infection with Lyme disease. They take the antibiotics. Sometimes that's all they need to do and they're fine. Probably Mariah would not agree with that. And I may agree with her that I don't necessarily agree with that, because you're still taking an antibiotic and there's still the possibility of persister cells. Now, everybody's immune system is different and everybody's in a different place with their immune system at any given time, because there are probably zillions of people in New England and America walking around with tick-borne illness, in Canada too. Canada's up there, right? It's north. Anyway, Canada too. Because, and the thing is, if you have a healthfully functioning immune system, it is possible that your body can keep Lyme at bay, that you get bitten by a tick, you don't even know it, your immune system is functioning really well, and you chew through it and you're done. That does happen. The other thing to understand is that when you take an antimicrobial for Lyme, you are not eradicating the organism. You can't eradicate an organism with antimicrobials. When you take antimicrobials, what you are doing is you're giving your immune system a leg up. So you're making it so that your immune system has a chance. So you're down-regulating the amount of organism that you have on board, and then your immune system can take over. So when you do a Lyme Western blot, which is a test you can get just from Quest Diagnostics or LabCorp, or, you know, name your favorite lab that you go to, Collaborative Laboratory Service, yes, ELS, or your favorite hospital, wherever, all right? When you get a Lyme Western blot there, they are testing for antibodies, and antibodies are not necessarily indicators of the presence of organism. It means that you were exposed to the organism. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have organism now. If you feel sick and then you test positive, then it can be helpful. So anyway, one of the things I'm going to do, I haven't done it yet, is I'm going to do a special kind of lab test that doesn't test, it's not looking for antibodies. It's checking for organisms in another way. I believe it is an immunoblot, but I am not entirely sure. But anyway, it's a different company, and so I'm going to get that test next week. And so then we're going to know, we can know with more certainty if I have Lyme disease and also the basic co-infections, Anaplasma, Ehrlichia, Bartonella, and Babesia. And I said to Mariah, I think probably I just have Lyme disease because I don't really seem to have the classic symptoms of the others. So with babesiosis, you're going to be looking for undulating fevers. I have no fever at all. You're going to be looking for extreme fatigue all of the time. I did have extreme fatigue a couple of weeks ago, so who knows? When I did my Quest Diagnostics babesia test, it was negative. That's neither here nor there. And it could be we didn't hit it when it was active, so we're going to see. But I felt like I didn't have particular symptoms of babesiosis. Bartonella, I felt like I didn't have the emotionality and the foot pain that you see with foot and heel pain that you see with Bartonella. And I also don't have striae. I don't have the rashes. I don't have any of the rashes going on. And I said, given that I don't have particular Bartonella symptoms, I probably don't have it, right? And she said, not necessarily. I said, okay, so I think it's a good idea to do this panel and check with this boutique panel for all of the for Lyme and all of the co-infections. And she said, it's better not to guess. And she is not wrong. It is better not to guess. And so if you have a good tool like that, you can find out for sure with more certainty that you have tick-borne illness. So I'm looking forward to that. One of the things that's great about, I mean, it's lousy to have tick-borne illness. It's really terrible to wake up in the morning or in the middle of the night shaking and having horrible tremors and feeling like your scapulae, your shoulder blades are being pulled back by somebody that you can't even see. And have this heavy lightheadedness and, you know, not be able to function and have to cancel work and stuff. That's terrible. The other hand is, for you, when a naturopathic physician gets an illness, it benefits you. Because as long as we're not completely debilitated, which I'm clearly not, we're going to study the heck out of it, and we're going to figure out how to treat it, and we're going to figure out how to help ourselves so that, we can help you, which is why I am on Radio Naturopath talking to you about all of this and letting you know that tick-borne illness is a thing that can be dealt with, and I am dealing with it, and I'm having some success, so that's fantastic. So what was the next thing Mariah said? She said, all right, you're going to take the Lymerita. I'm like, Lymerita? What the heck? So the Lymerita it's called the Lymerita because it has a bunch of alcohol in it, only because it's tinctures. What is a tincture? A tincture is herbs extracted in alcohol. Most herbs, I won't say 100% of herbs, but most herbs are best, their constituents are best extracted in alcohol because alcohol is a great solvent. So if you're looking for particular constituents, when you make a tincture and you let the herbs sit in the tincture, sit in the alcohol for however many weeks that they're going to sit, you're going to extract a large amount of the constituents and concentrates. So that's why it has to be an alcohol. Now, it can be problematic to take tinctures if for some reason you shouldn't have alcohol, like you have liver disease or you have alcohol, you have an alcohol problem, you're considered to be an alcoholic or, you know, you have alcohol dependency, then you're not going to be able to take tinctures unless you put them in warm water and make sure most or all of the alcohol is burned off. Some people won't even do that. And so for people like that, then we have to use capsules. There are herbs in capsule form that you can use. But because I don't have, I don't have a problem with alcohol. I drink as much as I want whenever I want. And what I mean by that is once every couple of months, someone will offer me a glass of wine, and I will drink it, and I might even finish the glass. And if they don't offer it to me, I forget about it. Once in a blue moon, I do Shabbos services, so I'll go to the synagogue, or I'll do Zoom Shabbos services, and then they'll have wine at the end of the Shabbos services. I'll have a glass of wine. Again, I might finish that one glass. I'm lucky if I do. But, you know, people who have a glass of wine every couple of nights or on the weekends, that's not me. So now I'm drinking more than I ever do because, you know, these tinctures amount to just over a half a cup of alcohol a day. But the way that I'm doing it, I'm putting the tinctures in a great big bottle of water because Mariah said you need to take it over 3 to 4 times a day. So I have a lovely glass bottle. We got these great glass bottles at the CNPA conference. I think it says powered by nature on it. It's really cool. And so what you do is you fill the whole thing, fill it with water, leave room for the tincture, or you can put the tinctures in first if you want to. Then you do 3 to 4 squirts of each tincture. And then you add to that modified citrus pectin. And modified citrus pectin is really, really important. So one of the things that happens, as we've talked about before, is that you can get a Herxheimer reaction when you're taking herbs for tick-borne illness. And a Herxheimer reaction is where you're breaking down the microorganisms. They're opening up in your system and they're dumping their endotoxins into your system and giving you symptoms. And so when you take modified citrus pectin, it helps to downregulate that. It downregulates. I'm assuming that the modified citrus pectin will attach to the endotoxins and help you excrete them better. That's one way that it works. But we also know that modified citrus pectin has a number of mechanisms. The big one that Mariah likes to talk about a lot is its downregulation of galectin 3. Galectin 3 is an inflammatory compound that will upregulate when you have tick-borne illness, and modified citrus pectin is excellent at downregulating. You'll see galectin 3 with tick-borne illness. You'll see galectin 3 with other inflammatory conditions. You'll see galectin 3 with cancer, which is one of the reasons we use modified citrus pectin for people with cancer. So the modified citrus pectin will make you less likely to have the Herxheimer response, so that's lovely. I am also taking berberine pinella, which is in the Nutramedics family, because I've always enjoyed taking those. Berber is a liver, lymph, and kidney cleanse, and then the pinel is a brain nerve cleanse. So I'm taking them also separate from the Limerita. We call it the Limerita because Mariah prefers to offer the flavored modified citrus pectin. That it's flavored with lime, and she thinks that that lime flavor makes all the herbs together taste not so bad. So as it happened, I had ordered the modified citrus pectin for my supplier, and before I talked to Mariah, and I ordered an unflavored one. I said, why do I need the lime? I think the lime might have been a little more expensive. So I said, I'll get the unflavored one. And then when I saw how many herbs she was putting into the Limerita, I said, okay, now I see why you flavor it with lime. Well, I have a solution for that. Ron buys limes all the time, so we always have limes in the cupboard, in the fridge. So I just, instead of having lime-flavored modified citrus pectin, I will have lime-flavored Limerita. I will take an actual slice of lime, squeeze it in, and drop it in, and it's going to sit there all day and flavor my drink. So she calls it a Limerita because it's flavored with lime, and it treats Lyme disease. All right, so what herbs go in the Limerita? Okay. So she texted me all of them, and I got them all. I gathered them all together. Thanks to her there were a couple that were really hard to find unless I got them directly from her, and I was able to get them from her the same day. So she's a goddess as far as I'm concerned. So anyway, so first of all, Japanese knotweed. So Japanese knotweed is like so important for pretty much any tick-borne illness. It gets into your brain. It's a wonderful antioxidant. It has resveratrol in it. And I also take resveratrol pills as a great antioxidant for my cardiovascular health. So I'm still taking that. Do I need to take it since I'm taking Japanese knotweed? I'm not so sure. But Mariah's always insisted that when you take Japanese knotweed tincture, you're getting, whenever you take a tincture, whenever you're taking whole herb, you're getting a synergy of constituents. So you don't get that when you take isolated resveratrol. You do get that when you take, when you take actual Japanese knotweed. And when you see the tincture, it's so beautiful. It's very, very dark. And it's kind of a a deep, deep red, almost kind of like astaxanthin, which is the compound that's in shrimp and that's in that when flamingos eat the shrimp, that turns them pink, and it's also what's in salmon. So when you have an astaxanthin pill, it looks black, but if you open it up, you can see that it's actually very, very dark red. And Japanese knotweed is like that. It's really, really dark red because there's a lot of polyphenols. It's a super antioxidant and it gets into the brain. So it's neuroprotective all over the place. So if you have neurological symptoms, Japanese knotweed is your friend. And Japanese knotweed is not a friend. I mean, I was talking to Dr. LaGuardia and he was like, "You want some? I got it all over my property. It's so hard to get rid of." And I didn't realize that Japanese knotweed is very hard to harvest because the roots are obnoxious. And there's two herbs. It's interesting. There are two herbs in this formula that are horribly invasive that shouldn't be in the United States, but are. One of them is Japanese knotweed and the other one is kudzu. And yet these two terribly invasive herbs are terrifically neuroprotective and neuromodulating. So they're both in the tincture. So I had never used kudzu before, but I wound up going and getting it. And, you know, regardless of what my ultimate diagnosis is, I'm going to keep the Japanese knotweed and the kudzu in because my main symptoms are neurological. I have minimal pain. Like I have pain because I have degenerative joint in my knee and in my back, but I can do things. My pain is not right now. It's not extreme. It's really, you know, I'm a little stiff and I'm sitting here. So I'm going to be stiff after I'm done with this, but I will do yoga stretches and sit in a different way and then I'll feel better. So I don't have pain is not one of my major symptoms. There's so many people who have tick-borne illness who have joint pain all over their bodies. And that has never been me, even when I had the erythema migraine rash. So there are certain, genetic subtypes that if you have those genetic subtypes, you're more likely to get Lyme arthritis. And I'm assuming that that's not me. So I don't tend to get Lyme arthritis. I get Lyme neurological stuff and bad. It's the, you know, the shaking is just no fun. All right. So Japanese knotweed and kudzu are two of the herbs that are in this concoction. Cat's claw, which is something we've used forever for Lyme disease, great antioxidants, great immunomodulating, helps to upregulate the immune system so that you can deal with the Lyme better. Then there's cryptolepis. Cryptolepis is antimicrobial and it will kill spirochetes. And the cool thing about cryptolepis, again, this is something that I hadn't used. I didn't even know what it was 10 years ago, but it's something that Buhner has elucidated. And of course, Mariah was trained by, or follows Buhner and trained by Dr. Burriscano, who's a big deal in the world of Lyme literate doctors. Anyway, cryptolepis is one of the only herbs, one of the few herbs, I should say, that breaks down persister forms. So it's really important to take if you're dealing with a chronic situation. So there's cryptolepis in there. Then there's hotunia. Well, hotunia, I don't know if it's so much a Lyme herb, but it does have antioxidant properties. It is antimicrobial. You think of hotunia more for Bartonella. And once I get tested, we'll see if I have Bartonella. And I'll chalk it over with Mariah and decide, do I really need the hotunia or not? I'm taking it now. It's in there now. And I may continue to take it. Then there's Chinese skullcap. Chinese skullcap and Japanese knotweed both have antimicrobial properties. And Chinese skullcap is a great antioxidant and it's calming, Scutellaria lateriflora, which is the one that's just the Nervine, the one that you take, you know, if you're having anxiety and depression that you can drink as a tea. That's not Chinese skullcap. Chinese skullcap is Scutellaria bakelensis, and it has bakeline in it, and the bakeline is the wonderful anti-inflammatory, antimicrobial, neuroprotective. It has all those properties. And then there's ashwagandha in there, and I was thinking that I had a problem with ashwagandha because that ashwagandha was making me sleepy. I don't know if that was it because it's in my concoction now, and I'm okay. I'm not excessively sleepy. I stopped doing so much caffeine. I actually had my first bit of caffeine today. I bought a chai and I drank it today and I feel okay. And I'll see, maybe I can have a little caffeine every couple of days, but not pounding it like I was doing it. I was just having too much every single day. But maybe I'll be one of those people, you could have a coffee on the weekend, or you could have a tea on the weekend, and that'll be it. And, you know, I'll have that chai, I'll drink it up, and then I probably won't have caffeine for a while. But anyway, the ashwagandha, so ashwagandha is really important because it is regulating for your adrenals, and it's overall calming, but it is nourishing to the adrenals. And the big thing about ashwagandha is an anti-hyaluronidase. So these nasty spirochetes, one of the things they do is they make an enzyme called hyaluronidase, which breaks down hyaluronic acid. So what's hyaluronic acid? It is a hygroscopic entity that's part of your skin and your tendons and your muscles and your bones. And so the spirochetes go after hyaluronic acid. They eat collagen, and what they really love is hyaluronic acid. And so they have this hyaluronidase so they can eat your collagen. Isn't that lovely? And so ashwagandha is anti-hyaluronidase. It breaks down hyaluronidase. So it helps to maintain your joints while you're going through Lyme disease. It also makes you cheerier because you're calmer. You're not so anxious. Then there's Sweet Annie. Oh boy. Why it's called Sweet Annie is anybody's guess. It's the opposite of sweet. It's one of the common names for Artemisia annua, and I've always thought of Artemisia annua as a vermifuge, which it is. What's a vermifuge? Something that kills worms. It's an antiparasitic. And one of the things, I was just looking at Lindsay Wells, my colleague in Connecticut. I was looking at her website, and she was talking about how Sweet Annie, obviously it's antiparasitic, and that Lyme can live inside of parasites, and that Artemisia annua, if you've got some Lyme that's hitching a ride on some parasites in your body, the Sweet Annie will go after it. I'm assuming that Sweet Annie also goes after the tick-borne illness directly. So that's my cocktail. It's these eight herbs. There are other herbs I could be doing. I could be doing Eleuthero, which is another nourishing adrenal tonic. I could be doing Rhodiola as well, also a nourishing adrenal tonic. And, of course, the modified citrus pectin is going in. So we're talking a few scoops a day go in the concoction. So I make the whole thing up at night, and I put the lime in. I let it sit in the fridge overnight, and then I drink it. I drink it three times a day because Mariah said to spread it out over the day, that don't do it all at once. So I said, fine. And that way, I think that the reason to do that is so that you're confusing the organisms. The organisms never have a chance to ramp back up. So because you're fighting them throughout the day, you're introducing the substances throughout the day, so they don't have a chance to reproduce. So it's easy. You just make the whole thing up at night, and then drink a third three times a day, and that's it. And so I drink it in the morning, first thing in the morning. I drink it with lunch, and then I have my evening supplements that I take, and when I drink it, the rest of it then. And then when I'm done, I wash out the bottle and I start over and put it back in the fridge, and off we go. So we'll see if this works. Another herb I could be taking, I have is motherwort, and I really like motherwort because motherwort is indicated in treating tick-borne illness because it's wonderfully cardioprotective, and Lyme spirochetes will go after the cardiovascular system. They'll go, particularly go after your heart, and it also motherwort is calming. So I think I talked a bit about motherwort last week. So interestingly, I spoke to Mariah on Thursday, a couple of days ago. It's today, Saturday, and then I'm recording this on a Saturday. And so I've been taking the Limerita. We lovingly call it Limerita because it's a little bit of alcohol with lime in it. And I feel so much better just after 3 days of taking this thing. How long am I going to have to take it? Good question. I'm going to go with at least a month. And what you're supposed to do is whatever you're doing to treat yourself for tick-borne illness, you're supposed to keep treating even after you feel well for at least 2 months. So is this me feeling well now? I wouldn't say that. I'm still, like, I haven't gone back to doing cardio exercise. I did take a full yoga class today. I was very happy about that, and I felt fine afterwards, very good and relaxed. The other thing I continue to do is take regular acupuncture treatments. So very grateful to Nicole Smith over in Scotland. And I had a lovely treatment last night. And Nicole, what she'll do is if she's doing other things, she'll come in. Hey, Fran, would you like extra time? She asked me for extra, if I wanted extra time twice. And I said, yes, yes. So I sit in with the needles in, or I lie with the needles in and zone out. And it's great. And one of the things that she did with the needles is she did points for wind. So you have the six evils in Chinese medicine, the six external, I call them external pernicious influences, because that's what I learned at naturopathic college. And from that, I guess that's what they call them at the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine. She said that in the school she went to, they didn't call it that. And I think she went to school in California, but the six external factors or something like that. She had a different name for it, but they are they're wind, heat, summer heat, cold, damp, and dry. And they can be external. So if you get hit with wind and cold, if you're outside and you get hit with wind and cold, the belief in Chinese medicine is you can come down with a cold. And she said if your blood and qi aren't flowing the way they're supposed to, it makes an opening for the wind to get in. And so she did points for wind. And one of the points she did for wind, she put the needle in, and after she left the room, it really hurt. And then it calmed down. So that was good. So I was able to tolerate that needle. And so she was releasing excess wind in my body. And one of the great things is when she gives me a really good treatment, I feel like I'm sinking into the earth. I really feel grounded. And if too much wind, you're going to be fluttering around in the wind. The belief is that seizures are because of an excess of wind in the body in Chinese medicine. So, and I'm not having seizures, I'm having tremors. So tremors and seizures both are an excess of wind. So she helped to release some of that wind. And so that really helps too. So getting acupuncture, I think, is great as well. I tolerate it well and it works well. So that's what's going on right now. I can't say I'm 100% off sugar and caffeine. I'm having way less. I didn't have any caffeine for a week and a half until today, where I had a bit of chai, and I may finish the chai and we'll see. I'm having nibbles of sugar in the context of eating a generally healthy diet. And of course, eating the generally healthy diet is very very important. So healthy protein, organic vegetables in the form of, we're doing soups, stir fries, and salads, healthy protein through the day, some amounts of healthy whole grains. Probably that there are some people when they have neurological symptoms, they recommend going ketogenic. I've gone really low carb and I feel really awful when I do it. So I think the thing for me to do is just to watch my carbs and not eat too many of them. I did stop eating pastries. I like to buy gluten-free pastries and have a little bit with a little bit of dairy-free ice cream. And I stopped doing that. So what I'm having is a bite of chocolate at night, and that's if I have anything at all. So I've really cut way, way back on my sugar and way back on my caffeine as well. And so, of course, that's going to help too. And because one of the things that Mariah and anybody, and me too, is going to let you know is that, again, you can fight your tick-borne illness. When you take antimicrobials, you're not expecting the antimicrobials to eradicate it for you. You're expecting the antimicrobials to give you a leg up so that your immune system can take over. That's what you're doing. And you're also taking things to support the immune system so that the immune system works better. And so, you know, even if that thing is a probiotic, or you're eating healthy fruits and vegetables, or you're eating a fermented food, or you're having mushrooms in your soup, all of those things are going to help support your immune system so your immune system works better. Because those people who get bitten by ticks and may or may not know it, or they take, you know, a week of antibiotics and they're absolutely fine afterwards, their immune system, that week of doxycycline is not killing all the Lyme disease. What's going on is they're taking that weak doxycycline takes the edge off, and then their immune system takes over, and their immune system is like, ha, you think you're going to live here? I don't think so. And it goes after it. I have been under a lot of stress running a business and all the things that I do, and I ate too much sugar and caffeine, I'll admit it, and that put me under stress. So my terrain was ripe for anything reemerging. So it meant that I had to step back and rest. And one of the things I have to do is I have to get off the bike, which I hate. But I would rather be well than sick. So what I can do is yoga. And so I monitor how I feel. The other day, I did not feel well enough even to do yoga. Today, I did. And today, I was able to do a full class. And I generally feel well enough to do yin yoga or restorative yoga, but not necessarily. There were days where I was feeling so bad that I didn't even do yin yoga. But sometimes what happens is if I'm really kicked up, it seems that my pattern is there's some kind of a vagus nerve thing that happens where the vagus nerve is not behaving the way that it's supposed to. So I'll have an adrenal outflow and that will bring on tremors. But I think it's that my nervous system, I'm assuming that's what it is. Again, we're not going to know for 100% for sure. Even with getting this nice test that I'm going to get, we won't know 100% for sure, but we'll have a pretty good idea. We're assuming that this is tick-borne illness, and it's a very good presupposition because we know I've had tick-borne illness before. Look where I live. If you see my beautiful backyard there with all the pine trees and the grass and me loving to be outside and me doing yoga in the yard, even though I spray myself with tick spray, I had no problem last year, and this year I did. So what are you going to do? But this year, again, I had the injury, and I think the inflammation helped to kick it up. So making your terrain inhospitable to tick-borne illness is the most important thing. And if you heal your terrain, whatever you got going on, whether it's cancer or chronic sinusitis or allergies, it doesn't matter what condition you have. If you make your terrain super healthy, you sleep good, you rest well, you don't have too much stress in your life, you eat good quality food, you stay away from food intolerances, and you help yourself in any way that you can to have a healthy body, whatever it is that you have, you're not going to have. So I have these people come into me. They come into me, I can't sleep. Okay, let's talk about what's going on. Do you have stress? Yeah, stress. And we talk about how to moderate the stress that they have and also things that they can do like meditate or yoga or naps or leisure walks in nature, all the cool things you can do to reduce your stress, deep breathing, EFT, tapping, all the different things you can do. I might give them something to take like theanine or ashwagandha or pharmagabba or, you know, other nervine herbs. So we talk about all those things, and then they'll tell me, well, I drink coffee in the morning. Okay. So you can't sleep at night. No, I have trouble sleeping, but you're doing coffee but it's in the morning. It's not going to affect me at night. I'm like, does it make sense to ingest something that is a stimulant when you're having trouble sleeping? What sense does that make? But it shouldn't still be in my body, but maybe it is. You know, and you have the coffee every 24 hours, you're having at least some coffee and some days even more. The best thing you can do is get it so that your body is nice and tired so you can actually get to sleep. If you're dependent on caffeine, you're going to have that whole caffeine adenosine cycle where you have the extreme bonding of the adenosine. You're going to have the reduced adenosine receptors. No, sorry, the increased adenosine receptors and the high bonding of adenosine. And then you're going to feel extra tired, which is going to make you want to drink more caffeine. And you're going to go to sleep. And even though you're exhausted when you go to sleep, you're going to wake up and still feel tired because you still have, you have too much adenosine bound to your brain receptors and you're going to feel exhausted. So you have to do things that make sense. Eating sugar increases inflammation. When you eat too much sugar, you increase your insulin. Insulin pushes a lot of inflammatory compounds. The more sugar you eat, the more inflammation you're going to have. Sugar's unhelpful in a number of ways. That's one of them, that it raises insulin, therefore inflammatory compounds. It causes dysbiosis. It causes you to have a higher level of unhelpful yeast or an unhelpful bacteria in your digestive system. And they will outcompete the good ones that help to support your immune system. Sugar also needs to be, when you take sugars or starches, they need B vitamins to process them. And you need B vitamins for so many things. You need them to process hormones and neurotransmitters, including your cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, and regulate your blood sugar. But when you eat sugar that is depleted of these B vitamins, then you have to get your B vitamins from someone else and you wind up depleted. So all of those hormones and neurotransmitters don't work in as effective a manner. So sugar is generally unhelpful when it comes to immune support and mood and a whole bunch of things. So helping the terrain to be healthful is really the way to go. Now, even when I, backed off and got my terrain in shape, it's not going to get in shape in a couple of days. But, it's clear that my terrain was downregulated enough that I had an emergence of whatever it is I've had. So when I get the test, when I get the test results, I'll let you know what exactly I had. So that'll be exciting to find out. All right, so we talked, I went off more about tick-borne illness. This is going to first be played in the new year on WHUS, although if you're listening to me now, you're listening to me before that. So Happy New Year if you're listening in the new year. Merry Christmas if you haven't had Christmas yet. And Happy New Year if you're... if you just had your new year, and I like to say Happy New Year pretty much through the month of January. And if you celebrate Kwanzaa, Happy Kwanzaa, because there may be some ways to listen to this before. I mean, obviously you're listening now, because if you're listening on Facebook or Instagram Live. So anyway, happy holidays. I hope that that you're enjoying yourself and that you have a nice easing into the new year and that 2024 is a lovely and healthful and prosperous year for you. All right. So as I talked to you in my series on, healthy aging, we'll wrap up with talking about sarcopenia. So sarcopenia is muscle loss. And so your sarcoid tissue is muscle tissue. And so sarcopenia is a word that means muscle loss due to aging. And it's a thing that can happen. And I have friends who have talked to me about that. So it is a common condition that affects like 10% of adults who are 50 years of age or older. So I may have some of that. It can decrease life expectancy, quality of life. But there are things you can do to maintain your muscle mass. The word sarcopenia actually means lack of flesh. And muscle degeneration happens when you get over 50 because you may not be as active. Your metabolism is not the same as it was when you were in your 20s. And you may or may not be getting the exercise that you need to maintain the muscle mass. And you need to be able to eat protein and then convert it into muscle tissue. And that's harder to do the older that you get. And so sarcopenia can shorten life expectancy compared to people with normal muscle strength. It's caused by an imbalance between signals for muscle cell growth and signals for tear down. So you wind up tearing down muscle more than you're building it up. When you grow cells, it's called anabolism, when you're bringing up cells, and tear down is called catabolism. So growth hormones act with protein-destroying enzymes to keep muscle steady through a cycle of growth, stress, or injury, and destruction and then healing. And we always have this cycle occurring. When things are in balance, your muscle keeps its strength over time, especially if you challenge your muscles so that they can grow. So what accelerates muscle loss? Immobility, a sedentary lifestyle, and especially if you have bed rest or immobilization after an injury. If you decrease your exercise, even though it's not as dramatic, you will lose muscle mass and strength. And periods of decreased activity can be a vicious cycle. You have decreased strength, so you don't work out as well. Then you have more fatigue, and it's harder to start your normal activity again. If you're not eating a healthy diet, if you're not eating enough calories, and certainly if you're not eating enough protein, low-calorie and low-protein diets are more common with aging because of people's taste, teeth problems, gums, swallowing, the function of the immune system, and also people get older, they don't want to shop, they don't want to cook, so they eat simple, easy things and they don't get their protein on board. So The recommendation is 25 to 30 grams of protein at each meal. And what I try to tell people is at the minimum 70 grams of protein a day, more if you're very active. So 25 to 30 grams of protein at meal, that's topping out at 90 grams. And that's if you're not super active. If you're pretty active, you want to be closer to the 100 or more gram range. If you have injury or illness and you have inflammation, your body is going to send signals to tear down tissue and rebuild groups of cells. When you have chronic or long-term diseases, that inflammation can disrupt that normal balance of tear down and healing, which can result in muscle loss. So there was a study on people with COPD that showed those people had decreased muscle mass because they don't breathe well, so they don't not able to exercise well. And there are other illnesses that cause long-term inflammation, especially autoimmune diseases, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, vasculitis. Also, if you've had severe burns, when you have severe burns, you have a lot of inflammation and you have a lot of wasting of tissue from the burn. And anything where you have a lot of inflammation, that can predict sarcopenia, which is that muscle loss. When you're under severe stress, that's going to cause muscle loss too. So any kind of stress, if you have stress from a health condition, if you just have stress in your life, that can cause sarcopenia. You will get sarcopenia if you do excess amounts of cardio. So if you're, you know, if your thing is you do like lots and lots of cardio, you're going to lose muscle mass. So if your thing is you're a runner and most of the running that you do is long distance running and you're getting older, you're getting to be 50 plus, you can have sarcopenia from that. That's why I try to talk to so I have people who I can't beg them to get some kind of exercise and they can't get any, they don't manage to get exercise at all. Then I have people who overdo it and what they overdo is cardio. Because cardio really does make you feel good and it makes you feel accomplished and it's really good if you have anxiety, it really calms your anxiety. So people get addicted to it and they'll run most days of the week and they'll run 5-6 plus miles, which is a long way to run. Or they're always training for distance events like half marathons and marathons or triathlons. I'm not saying you shouldn't do those things, but you really have to cut back and you have to make sure you're eating adequate protein, you're getting adequate rest, and that you're mixing it up with resistance training, that you're doing some kind of resistance style yoga or body weight training or Pilates or some kind of weight training. So you know what? We're out of time. I'm going to finish talking about sarcopenia next week, the next time you hear from me. So this was it was really lovely talking to you. I can't believe it's 20. Some of you are listening in 2023, some in 24. So happy New Year, happy holidays, happy whatever it is you celebrate. And I'll keep you posted on what's going on with Lyme stuff. There's always more to learn, and that's one of the great things. One of the things about having an illness myself is that I learn about it and I can teach you about it and I can help other people with it, which is something you could consider doing as well. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host Ron Meniza, who is not here right now. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.